for listening to Abundance. I've learned my listeners love to hear about my problems and how I decide to deal with them. I have an abundance of funny and interesting things that have happened in my life. I think my job may be to tell you about them so you feel better about your own life. I am your host, Dane Allred, and we're here to focus on the bounty of this universe. We're all millionaires. We have 31 million seconds to spend every year, and I hope you're spending them with an attitude of thanks. I've created my list of 1,001 thanks to help me focus on the positive side of life, and I hope you'll be motivated this day to accentuate the positive. Honesty, number 533 from my list, is part of the abundance I celebrate. Our episodes today include A Little Too Much Honesty, Value Meal, Lost or Stolen, and The Cost of Conformity. And you'll hear the Grimm Brothers fairy tale, The Robber Bridegroom, and the poem Six Honest Serving Men by Rudyard Kipling. It's abundance. Funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. A little too much honesty. I believe in being honest. I recently asked one of my classes if they took the spare change from vending machines. Well, they are poor college students, so most of them said yes. I told them it wasn't their money, but one student insisted it was like finding money on the street. I assured them that when I was a starving student, I too used to take the money left by someone else in a vending machine. It was found money. But now, I usually leave the change for someone who really needs it. I've also asked my students why they hate Abraham Lincoln. They look at me and wonder why I'm saying such a strange thing. I tell them that in the building where I work, enough students leave pennies lying around for the custodians to pick up that they can usually have a pizza party at the end of the year. The custodians tell me they pick up $60 or $70 worth of pennies in a year. I tell the students it just shows a rampant disrespect for our 16th president and just to leave him lying around like that. I also tell them people in the future will wonder why we hated pennies so much. I also asked the students if we could be too honest. One guy immediately reminded me we don't want to answer one question in particular too honestly. Guys know what question I'm talking about. If someone ever asks you, does this dress, these pants, this skirt, this muumuu make me look fat? Well, there is no correct answer. But it does make me laugh when I think of Chris Farley's response from Tommy Boy. You can never say it out loud to anyone, but he is immortalized on film saying, no, your face makes you look fat, or something like that. Honesty is a relative quality. And the closer the relative, the more dishonest you may have to be. Really, though, honesty is overrated most of the time. No one wants you to be honest with them, and most times you are asked to lie for someone else. Tell me you didn't tell the boss's last idea was great when you really thought it was inane. I've lied and taken the blame for someone else's poor driving and denting of a van. I've lied about my weight, but it's not what you think. I weigh about 180 now, but all during high school I was probably 130 or 135. But there is no way I would have admitted that to anyone. I think I even put 140 on my license just in case someone checked. So when I got fat in my late 20s, no one was happier than me. It may sound strange to be glad to be carrying around extra weight, but I am so much happier being fat than skinny. Most of us aren't really comfortable in our skin. We have a perfect image of what we really want to be, and almost no one is ever happy with how they are right now. When we ask others, they try to assure us we look fine, our lives are fine, that we should be happy with our lives. But there always seems to be someone else happier, skinnier, richer, or whatever than we are. It is a sad way to live, and while we wish our lives away, we are really being dishonest with ourselves. Can I just be happy with this day, with this body, with this spouse, with this job, with this life? There really are only two choices. Happy, unhappy. Most of us choose to spend our days, weeks, and years yearning for something we will probably never see. My wife gave me a great compliment the other day, and I don't think she realized she did. She said to me, "But you don't care what other people think about you." She may be right. I think there is a small part of me which vainly wishes praise, but I'm dominated by the comfortable part of me which wants to wear pajama pants to Walmart. She's even brave enough to be seen in public with me, since nearly everyone we know is aware that she has to put up with me. Maybe I'm just a little too honest. I probably should care more about how I look, but when I pointed out to some of my colleagues I had the hanger wrinkle on my dress pants, one particular woman was incredulous. She couldn't believe I didn't use special hangers for pants. They're even called pants hangers. I don't use those for pants. Well, I do hang my pajama pants up with them. That is, my wife hangs them up for me. If it was my choice, I'd probably just fold them up. Honestly. To Abundance, a program where we find 1,001 ways to say thank you. This is KTKK AM 630, and for crystal clear reception on your computer, go to www.k-talk.com and click on the yellow Listen Now Starburst, or type KTKK into any web browser. Today we're expressing our thanks for honesty, number 533 on my list of 1,001 thanks. Funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. Value Mill. You know that I claim I don't like to complain, but it does seem that's mostly what I do. Since I'm trying to be honest today, I think I should honestly say I don't like to complain, but today I will be complaining. I probably will be tomorrow, too. I really do try to be honest, and I want others to be honest with me, too. I think I have two examples which are bothering me today, so let's get down to brass tacks, which I think means getting to the heart of the business. Brass tacks must be used underneath the fabric where people can't, and then where people can see the upholsterers must use some other kind of tack. Anyway, I was really excited to have an Arby's French dip sandwich on the way to teach one of my night classes. I usually leave the high school with plenty of time to get something to eat before my college classes at 5, but today I was cutting it pretty close. The French dip, for those who are unfamiliar with one of the most delicious sandwiches ever invented, is roast beef on a stale bun. This must have been made popular back when bread didn't have all of the preservatives. But the reason you don't mind having a stale bun is because you dip the whole thing in au jus. Perhaps another explanation is necessary here if you don't know what au jus is. The Encarta Dictionary, which pops up on demand in my word processing program, tells us that it means in its own juice. I think it's French. In other words, meat, juice, served with meat. I would have guessed it was salt water dyed brown, but even if it was just brown salty water, it is also delicious. You dip the sandwich, soak up the salty goodness of the au jus, and voila, which is also French for there you are. The formerly stale bun is now a sop, which means food dipped in liquid. I love the Encarta feature. Who cares if it's right? Does this mean a donut dipped in coffee is also a sop? I think by now you understand that my attraction to the French dip sandwich has more to do with the au jus than the sandwich. Which is why I was not too pleased when I opened my order after driving 10 miles to where I could eat a sopping sandwich and found out there was no au jus. I know it was probably an honest mistake, but that's what we're discussing today, isn't it? An honest mistake, that's not necessarily one made on purpose, but it is still upsetting nonetheless. I was too far away to go back and get the delicious accompaniment to my now mostly just roast beef and stale bun sandwich, so I suffered in silence. And really, can I take offense if someone forgot to give me my au jus? I just love saying that phrase. Now let's move to another honest mistake, which I think cost me $100. My daughter drives the Jeep, and the starter quit working, so I paid $500 to get it fixed. No complaints yet, since this is about typical for what we do for that car every so often. I understand that cars don't last forever. I do want mechanics to be there when I need them, so sometimes I may have to be the one making sure they stay in business. Maybe next week it will be you. So my daughter gets in the Jeep this morning, and since it was below freezing and she turned on a rear defroster, again, the car won't start. She calls me. I ignore her text. By the time I call her at lunch, she's read my mind. The shop has towed it back to see what is wrong. So here's the report I get later in the week. Surprise! The wiring for the starter and the defroster are somehow connected. And it cost me $100 for the mechanics to find this out. When I called to make the payment over the phone, I asked about having the towing waived. Now, for the uninitiated, if the car doesn't work and it's the shop's fault, you usually aren't charged to have the car towed back in. So when I questioned the towing charge, the person in charge waived it much too quickly. I mean, it was a wiring problem, not a starter problem, and how could they have predicted they were wired together? Here's what I think happened. Yank on the starter wires and you might short out the defroster wires. But they still got another $100 from me. This is Abundance, and I'm your host, Dane Allred. Today we're talking about honesty, number 533 on my list of 1,001 thanks. I hope your day is turning out as nice as mine. It is almost 20 minutes past the hour. More to come later in the hour. We're going to be talking about six honest serving men, a famous Rudyard Kipling poem, and we'll also be hearing one of those famous Brothers Grimm stories, The Robber Bridegroom. And I need to warn you that they get their name very appropriately. Instead of the Brothers Grimm, maybe they should have been called the Brothers Gruesome. Thank you.
Downtown Philly Cheesesteaks. We're the guys who have been making authentic Philly steaks at 106 South and Redwood Road for over a year now. And we're excited to announce the opening of our new location in American Fork at 933 West, 500 North, right in front of Costco. If you haven't tried our cheesesteaks yet, I'd like to invite you to come out to either location today. We know you'll be satisfied because cheesesteaks are all we do, so your sandwich gets our full, undivided attention. Though we may try to talk you into buying a tasty cake or a Pennsylvania Dutch Birch beer. Visit us online today at thedowntownphilly.com for our menu and directions.
This tax year, H&R Block has a special offer for you. For a simple 1040 EZ, the federal return is only $39 for the tax prep and electronic filing. More complex federal returns start at $99. This is Jim Kirkwood, the office manager of the H&R Block store at 2121 East, 9400 South. And I want to invite you in to receive the most accurate, carefully prepared return possible. When we examine the tax returns completed by other preparers, we find an error rate of 87%. We only charge $29 to check those returns. So don't let someone's mistake cost you big dollars in penalty and interest. If we make a mistake, we pay the penalty and interest. We have enrolled agents to assist you with an audit, so you needn't be concerned when you use H&R Block for your tax prep and electronic filing. At H&R Block, we demand the highest ethical standards from our people, so you're assured the best possible outcome. Call us for an appointment at 801-733-9372. Again, that's 801-733-9372. We're located at 2121 East, 9400 South in Sandy. That's H&R Block.
Are you a glass-is-half-empty kind of person, or is the glass half-full? On Abundance, we pause to consider all the wonderful blessings of a world where many diseases have been eliminated, where we are more connected than ever before, where the abundance of life is evident at every turn. Listen to Abundance every Sunday from 7 to 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time right here on KTKK AM 630. We'll discuss the 1,001 things I'm thankful for from my list of 1,001 thanks. You may find your attitude changing from one of shortage, scarcity, and insufficiency to one of abundance. You may become a my glass is overflowing kind of person. That's Abundance. Every Sunday on KTKK. You're listening to Abundance, and this week we're focusing on honesty, number 533 from my list of 1,001 thanks. Today I'm here to talk about some of my adventures and the surprises I've encountered. We're also listening to Literature Out Loud, and in just a moment, The Robber Bridegroom by the Brothers Grimm. The Robber Bridegroom by the Brothers Grimm. Once upon a time, there was a miller who had one beautiful daughter, and she was grown. And as she was grown up, he was anxious that she should be well married and provided for. He said to himself, "I will give her to the first suitable man who comes and asks for her hand." Not long after, a suitor appeared, and as he appeared to be very rich, and the miller could see nothing in him with which to find fault, he betrothed his daughter to him. But the girl did not care for the man as a girl ought to care for her betrothed husband. She did not feel that she could trust him. And she could not look at him nor think of him without an inward shudder. One day he said to her, "You have not yet paid me a visit, although we have been betrothed for some time." "I do not know where your house is," she answered. "My house is out there in the dark forest," he said. She tried to excuse herself by saying that she would not be able to find the way thither. Her betrothed replied, "You must come and see me next Sunday. I have already invited guests for that day, and that you may not mistake the way, I will strew ashes along the path." When Sunday came, and it was time for the girl to start, a feeling of dread came over her which she could not explain, and that she might be able to find her path again, she filled her pockets with peas and lentils to sprinkle on the ground as she went along. On reaching the entrance to the forest, she found the path strewed with ashes, and these she followed, throwing down some peas on either side of her at every step she took. She walked the whole day until she came to the deepest, darkest part of the forest. There she saw a lonely house, looking so grim and mysterious that it did not please her at all. She stepped inside, but not a soul was to be seen, and a great silence reigned throughout. Suddenly a voice cried, turn back, young maiden fair, linger not in this murderer's lair." The girl looked up and saw that the voice came from a bird hanging in a cage on the wall. Again it cried, turn back, young maiden fair, linger not in this murderer's lair." The girl passed on, going from room to room of the house, but they were all empty, and still she saw no one. At last she came to the cellar, and there sat a very, very old woman who could not keep her head from shaking. "Can you tell me," asked the girl, "if my betrothed husband lives here?"
"Ah, you poor child," answered the old woman, "what a place for you to come to. This is a murderer's den. You think yourself a promised bride, and that your marriage will soon take place, but it is with death that you will keep your marriage feast. Look, do you see that large cauldron of water which I am obliged to keep on the fire? As soon as they have you in their power, they will kill you without mercy, and cook you and eat you, for they are eaters of men. If I did not take pity on you and save you, you would be lost." Thereupon the old woman led her behind a large cask, which quite hid her from view. "Keep still as a mouse," she said. "Do not move or speak, or it will be all over with you. Tonight, when the robbers are all asleep, we will flee together. I have long been waiting for an opportunity to escape." The words were hardly out of her mouth when the godless crew returned, dragging another young girl along with them. They were all drunk and paid no heed to her cries and lamentations. They gave her wine to drink, 3 glasses full, 1 of white wine, 1 of red, and 1 of yellow. And with that her heart gave way and she died. Then they tore off her dainty clothing, laid her on a table, and cut her beautiful body into pieces, and sprinkled salt upon it. The poor betrothed girl crouched trembling and shuddering behind the cask, for she saw what a terrible fate had been intended for her by the robbers. One of them now noticed a gold ring still remaining on the little finger of the murdered girl, and as he could not draw it off easily, he took a hatchet and cut off the finger. But the finger sprang into the air and fell behind the cask into the lap of the girl who was hiding there. The robber took a light and began looking for it, but he could not find it. "Have you looked behind the large cask?" said one of the others. But the old woman called out, "Come and eat your suppers, and let the thing be till tomorrow. The finger won't run away." "The old woman is right," said the robbers, and they ceased looking for the finger and sat down. The old woman then mixed a sleeping draught with their wine, and before long they were all lying on the floor of the cellar, fast asleep and snoring. As soon as the girl was assured of this, she came from behind the cask. She was obliged to step over the bodies of the sleepers who were lying close together, and every moment she was filled with renewed dread lest she should awaken them. But God helped her, so that she passed safely over them, and then she and the old woman went upstairs, opened the door, and hastened as fast as they could from the murderer's den. They found the ashes scattered by the wind, but the peas and lentils had sprouted and grown sufficiently above the ground to guide them in the moonlight along the path. All night long they walked, and it was morning before they reached the mill. Then the girl told her father all that had happened. The day came that had been fixed for the marriage. The bridegroom arrived, and also a large company of guests, for the miller had taken care to invite all his friends and relations. As they sat for the feast, each guest in turn was asked to tell a tale. The bride sat still and did not say a word.
And you, my love, said the bridegroom, turning to her, is there no tale, you know? Tell us something. I will tell you a dream, then, said the bride. I went alone through a forest, and came at last to a house. Not a soul could I find within, but a bird that was hanging in a cage on the wall cried out, turn back, yon maiden fair, linger not in this murderer's lair. And again a second time it said these words, oh, my darling, this is only a dream. I went on through the house from room to room, but they were all empty, and everything was so grim and mysterious. At last I went down to the cellar, and there sat a very, very old woman who could not keep her head still. I asked her if my betrothed lived there, and she answered, ah, you poor child, you are coming to a murderer's den. Your betrothed does indeed live here, but he will kill you without mercy, and afterwards cook and eat you. My darling, this is only a dream. The old woman hid me behind a large cask, and scarcely had she done this when the robbers returned home, dragging a young girl along with them. They gave her three kinds of wine to drink, white, red, and yellow, and with that she died. My darling, this is only a dream. Then they tore off her dainty clothing, and cut her beautiful body into pieces, and sprinkled salt upon it. My darling, this is only a dream. And one of the robbers saw that there was a gold ring still left on her finger, and as it was difficult to draw off, he took a hatchet and cut off her finger. But the finger sprang into the air and fell behind the great cask into my lap. And here is the finger with the ring. And with these words, the bride drew forth a finger and showed it to the assembled guests. The bridegroom, who during this recital had grown deadly pale, up and tried to escape. But the guests seized him and held him fast. They delivered him up to justice, and he and all his murderous band were condemned to death for their wicked deeds. Honest Serving Men by Rudyard Kipling. I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when, and how and where and who. I send them over land and sea. I send them east and west. But after they have worked for me, I give them all the rest. I let them rest from 9 till 5, for I am busy then, as well as breakfast, lunch, and tea, for they are hungry men. But different folk have different views. I know a person small. She keeps 10 million serving men, who get no rest at all. She sends them abroad on her own affairs. From the second she opens her eyes, 1 million hows, 2 million wheres, and 7 million whys. You're listening to Abundance. Today we're discussing honesty, a robber bridegroom, and a bride who may be a little too honest. When you think about honesty, Alexander Pope put it this way, an honest man's the noblest work of God. Robert Burns said, dare to be honest and fear no labor. You may recognize this famous quote by Sir Walter Scott, Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. Thomas Jefferson said it this way, honesty is the first chapter in the book of wisdom. And here are two honesty quotes from Shakespeare. Honesty is the best policy. If I lose mine honor, I lose myself. He also said, no legacy is so rich as honesty. Mark Twain and Socrates maybe have a more accurate version of honesty. Socrates said it this way, the greatest way to live with honor in this world is to pretend. I'm sorry, I'll say it again. Socrates said, the greatest way to live with honor in this world is to be what we pretend to be. Mark Twain called honesty the best of all the lost arts. And to be honest with you, this is probably my attitude too, that Mark Twain said, I think we never become really and genuinely our entire and honest selves until we are dead. And not then until we've been dead years and years. People ought to start dead, and then they would be honest so much earlier. Welcome to Abundance, a celebration of good things happening in your life. I'm your host, Dane Allred, and you're listening to KTKK AM 630. This program is also available at www.k-talk.com or type KTKK into any web browser. If you click on the Listen Now Starburst, you'll be receiving crystal clear reception. This week, we're focusing on honesty, number 533 from my list of 1,001 thanks. On Abundance, we search for a way to be more positive in an ever-increasingly negative world. Where others attack, we seek to be thankful for this day and all the bounty of this earth. I am the incurable optimist, and we are here today to celebrate all the wonderful people and opportunities we enjoy in today's world. I'm so serious about being positive, I write a plus underneath my name. My blood type is even B positive. I've taken the time to write a list of 1,001 things I'm thankful for, and I call it my list of 1,001 thanks. Every week we examine one of the 1,001 ideas to help promote a more positive experience for you and those around you. Today we're celebrating honesty, number 533 from my list of 1,001 thanks. These broadcasts are available at daneallred.podbean.com and at 1001thanks.blogspot.com. Abundance is your chance to be your best, where we accentuate the positive, trying to eliminate the negative. It's 40 minutes past the hour. Thank you. A funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. Lost or stolen? I looked on the back of my debit card. It says, if lost or stolen, please call 1-888-555-1212. So let me think about that for a moment. If I lose my debit card, I'm supposed to have that number somewhere else so I can call and report it missing? And if someone else finds it, what are the chances they will call in and report they have found it? Or would the normal everyday passerby be tempted to see if it worked? I can't tell you how many times I've used the card and entered the wrong PIN and then was told by the clerk to just run it as a credit. This means anyone else could do the same thing if they find my card. It doesn't make me feel very secure. Some people like to feel the world as a more dishonest place. I've had things stolen from me before, but usually it's my fault. I remember how excited I was to get a class ring when I was in high school. It was really nice, but they're way too expensive, and what do we know when we're 17 years old? We just know we can't live without it, so we sacrifice and get it or just have mom and dad buy it. I was working one summer cutting pine poles and stopped at a service station on the way to the stand of timber. I took off my ring to wash my hands in the bathroom and left my ring on the sink. I realized later in the day what I had done, and after a long day getting the chainsaw to work, dodging falling trees, trimming limbs, and hauling the logs to the truck, I went back to the gas station later that night, and surprise, no one had turned in a lost ring. Who would want a high school ring from another school? No one I went to high school would have been even close to where I was. It wouldn't even be their school colors, but nonetheless, the ring was gone and someone had a new trinket. It wasn't the last ring I had stolen, although technically I lost my class ring before somebody kept it. My wedding ring was stolen one night when I was in the middle of a performance. For those of you who know who Howard Ruff is, you may be surprised to know that he likes to sing opera. In fact, I got to help him out on a show called HMS Pinafore by Gilbert and Sullivan. One of the scariest moments during rehearsals was when Howard had a kidney stone attack. I drove him home in his car, and my wife followed me to his house in our car. I knew he was in lots of pain, but I didn't know how much until I passed my first kidney stone about 5 years ago. So when the performances were finally started, we were all singing mightily on stage while someone else was going through our stuff backstage. They waited until a scene where everyone was on stage. Howard lost a couple of $100s, and they stole my wedding ring. That's right, a plain silver wedding ring. Well, really, it was white gold, but I still can't understand why anyone would want someone else's old ring. I guess someone was supporting a drug habit and needed some cash. So think about this. Whoever stole my ring has to go to a pawn shop and claim they don't want their wedding ring anymore. Or the person who usually buys their stolen goods knows better than to ask where the ring came from. Either way, it seems like more work to me than just getting a regular job. But this may be where most of us are actually dishonest without really thinking about it. On our job, our employers trust us to give an honest day's labor for our wage, and if we don't like the pay, we can always go get another job. But as a society, we tend to think our employers owe us more somehow, and taking time off work to do our personal errands seems acceptable. Employers complain about employee theft, but is it really a big deal? The National Retail Security Survey estimated that retailers lost $15.9 billion by employee theft in 2008, and they expected 2009 to be even worse. You want abundance? Listen to what super salesman and marketing guru Joseph Sugarman says about honesty. Each time you are honest and conduct yourself with honesty, a success force will drive you toward greater success. Each time you lie, even with a little white lie, there are strong forces pushing you toward failure. Honesty can make us more successful. Dealing with the consequences of being dishonest take a much bigger toll. It may make you fail. Thank you. This is Dane Allred. Welcome to Abundance. We're talking today about honesty, number 533 on my list of 1,001 thanks. You may have heard someone say we need an attitude of gratitude, but we aren't just thankful on abundance. We don't just have an attitude. We practice abundance and gratitude by expressing thanks each week. In a sea of attack and accusation, abundance is an island of peace and calm where we take just a part of the 168 hours we're given each week to proclaim a thankful attitude. We celebrate the joy and excitement of living in a world where many of us have used our present prosperity to bless the lives of others. Abundance is your chance to be your best. A funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. The cost of conformity. Honesty is an interesting concept. There must be more honest people in the world than dishonest people, or we wouldn't be able to function as a society. Some people feel the world is just getting worse each day, but in the long run, I think most people eventually figure out it's easier to live honestly in the world than dishonestly. It does seem young people who commit crimes eventually get the message as they get older. I think the most disturbing part about the whole concept of honesty is we really aren't honest with ourselves. We are mostly conformists. There are things we do every day which we only do because others are doing the same thing. It is a basis for society and sociability, but it makes me wonder how much of what we do is just because others are already doing it. There's a scene in an old black and white movie called Metropolis, made back in 1925, which reminds me of how many of us conform. In this old classic, the workers live underground and march off to work in a big square with everyone wearing exactly the same hat, shirt, and pants. It's an eerie image, and when you see the second shift walking home from work twice as slow, but still looking exactly the same, I think it was an interesting prediction to make 85 years ago. But if you look around today at the number of people wearing baseball caps, Levi's, and t-shirts, that kind of conformity really has come to pass. Are we honest because everyone else seems honest? Do you do things because other people do? If other people are speeding down the road, do you go the same speed even if you don't want to? Some of us even attend church so we can make a good impression. Do we not shop on Sundays because others don't, or do we do what we want when we want because we want to do it? Conformity is something that takes the individuality out of our lives and denies the world the unique contribution we might be here to make. When we really pay attention to our purpose, we may find a whole new life out there waiting for us. So how do you find your purpose? Why would we want to find our purpose? Well, I think finding a purpose can give meaning to what you do in life. It could guide and direct your actions, give you clear directions for the big decisions you may face. It could break us out of our automatic conformity. It may motivate you to do different things than you've been doing and help you survive failures. With a purpose, you'll be able to face rejection, especially if you're truly committed to your life purpose. Unfortunately, there's really no universal formula for finding a life purpose, especially since everyone will have to find their purpose in their own way. It takes time and should be thought of as a lifetime process. Our purpose may change as our lives change, but by identifying our strengths and our passions, the causes in which you believe, you'll be on the right path to find something meaningful to do with the time and talents you've been given. Find a way to do some work on those things that interest you. Using your strengths and passions, working on things you might enjoy, will help you understand if you're really on a path which is right for you. Real enjoyment happens when we lose ourselves in whatever it is we are doing. Time seems to fly, and when we realize hours have passed, this is a good indication we may be doing something true to our purpose. Some people call this being in the moment, and when you are completely present in the moment, everything else vanishes and you're not thinking, doing, but you are just being. This is what happens when we are doing something we truly enjoy. Many people experience this with their favorite recreation. Time doesn't pass in the same way. My favorite way to make time disappear is gardening. When I'm working in the yard, time stands still, but also seems to pass so quickly. I have projects on which I've been working for years, and while they may be done someday, then I'll move on to another project which will be completed in its own time. A real purpose in life can make the difference between a life fulfilled and a life of misery. Today is the day to start that journey which puts you on the path which will make a difference for you and the world. You'll never know unless you take the chance to find the reason you are here now. Thank you so much for listening to Abundance Today, a program where we find 1,001 ways to say thank you. Abundance is brought to you every Sunday night from 7 to 8 p.m. These programs are available at my website, DaneAllred.com, or just type my name, Dane Allred, into a browser, but they're also available at DaneAllred.podbean.com and the blog version with the podcast at 1001thanks.blogspot.com. Those programs are available 24/7. And thank you so much for listening today.